I haven't done this in a long time, and my heart is kind of fluttering. So it's great to be here with you. Thank you for the opportunity that you've allowed me to come and worship with you and speak today. Robert always remembers me and Jim Ledford as the ones who almost slayed him with a massive piece of log in Honduras, getting it out of a ditch, and it ended up almost on top of him. So I told him he could introduce me as the preacher slayer, but anyway, I do want to thank you all and bring greetings to you from the Baptist State Convention of North Carolina, of which I am one of your missionaries, state missionaries, and from all your missionaries and your staff there. And thank you so much for your giving, for your support, for your prayers, everything you do to make the ministry possible. I spent 13 years in the pastorate, 13 years as associational missionary here in Macon, and I'm in my 14th year with the convention. The last seven, I have about six assignments that are given to me in the role that I have. The two primary ones are working with associational missionaries and associations across the state. There are 78, so I cover the entire state, and also with bivocational ministries as well. So, but I thank you for the opportunity to be here. Anybody smell chicken? I don't smell it. It's a dangerous thing for a preacher to be in between a crowd like this and chicken, you know, on homecoming day. But I do thank you so much for allowing me to be here today and appreciate it. I want to share just a short video clip with you before we actually begin our message today.
I am never getting married.
Never.
Guaranteed.
You picked a beautiful ring.
Thank you. We're never having kids.
Breathe. I love it here.
We are never moving to the suburbs.
We are never getting one of those. We are never having another kid.
I'm pregnant.
I'm never letting go.
This guy finally was living the dream. He started off, I'm never gonna. And in the very end, he said, I'm never gonna let go. He's finally living the dream. There's a pop song that a group by the name of Togo did some years ago that says, some people live their dreams and some people close their eyes. Some people's destiny passes by. And so that kind of tells of expectations and dreams in people's lives. I like Winnie the Pooh. I don't know how many of you like Winnie the Pooh, but I like Winnie the Pooh and Piglet. And in Winnie the Pooh, Pooh and Piglet are taking an evening stroll, and for a long time they kind of walk in this companionable silence. And finally, Piglet breaks the silence, and he asks Pooh, when you wake up in the morning, Pooh, what's the first thing you say to yourself? And Pooh says, what's for breakfast? And what do you say, Piglet? And Piglet says, I wonder what exciting thing is going to happen today. Everyone dreams dreams. Every one of us dream dreams. Peter, on the day of Pentecost, as he quoted from the prophet Joel, said, your young men will see visions, your old men will dream dreams. So what are your dreams? What are your expectations? I think back as I grow older to some of those, and when you're young, you dream of getting old enough to go to school, you dream of getting a driver's license, you dream of getting your first car, you dream of going on your first date, you begin to dream about reaching the age of adulthood to be able to vote, be on your own, to go to college, to launch a career, get married, have a family, owning a home, all these things you begin to dream about as you move through life, these aspirations you have. When we get older, all those dreams become bucket list of things that we hope to do before we die. Some of us get some of those done earlier, and some of us don't get them done at all. But we dream of growing old together with our spouse. We dream of enjoying grandchildren. We dream of cherishing our relationships. We dream of retirement. We dream of traveling together. We dream of doing whatever to remain looking good and feeling young. And that takes some work for some of us. And finishing strong. Dreams are an important part in Scripture. Dreams and visions give a person a story to tell. It's a sense of direction. And I'm sure that those people who were involved in starting this church 194 years ago were living God's dream, were living a dream. They had a dream. They had a vision of what God was placing them here to accomplish. And a question I can ask is, has God's dream changed for those of us who are part of this congregation today, or have we changed from that original dream? Because in the world of ministry where I serve, there is tremendous amount of discussion about revisioning. So many churches are declining and so many are closing every year, and our population is exploding, and even those that are declining, we're trying to figure out how can we help those churches turn around and become growing churches, because they have lost the vision of what God has placed them there to do. And in some cases, the congregation or someone in the congregation has kind of usurped God's role in that congregation. And it's my church now, it's not God's. So it's important to think about this, because when we think about that, that means the revisioning means being captured by a renewed vision from God. Being in Revelation, in the book of Revelation, John probably puts it best to the church of Ephesus in these terms: forsaking your first love, remember the height from which you've fallen, because small expectations will yield meager results. God has great dreams and expectations for your life, each one of you. No one excluded. Every person God has great dreams and expectations for. And one of the instances of that is seen in the lessons of Joseph's life in the book of Genesis. So as you, I'm going to read with you out of chapter 35, verses 5 through 11, and we're going to kind of look at the beginning of the story of Joseph's dreams, and then we're going to move over to chapter 45 and read verses 5 through 7 to kind of give you the end result of those dreams. Chapter 5, Genesis. Chapter 37 in Genesis, verse 5. Then they set out, and terror fell upon them. Verse 6. I'm in the wrong chapter. 37, I'm sorry. Chapter 37, verse 5. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. And he said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose up and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." And his brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. And then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and at this time the sun and moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." And when he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in hand. And then in chapter 45, verses 5 through 7, it says, "I am your brother." When he had revealed himself to his brothers, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there's been a famine in the land. If the next five, there will be not plowing or reaping, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God." I want you to think about this in terms of Joseph's situation, because through living these dreams, he was living the dreams that God had given him, the visions that God had shared with him. God shaped his life for service, for the service he wanted him to do. And so when we look at the background of the text, I want to take you back a little bit, because Jacob and Esau were Isaac's two sons, two twins. And you know in the story that Jacob, after getting the blessing from Esau and stealing his birthright that Esau was supposed to get, he fled to Haran, to the area of Haran, to Laban, who was Rebekah's father. Rebekah was their mother, Jacob's wife. And he was also, as he fled there, Jacob met Rachel's brothers at a well, and they took him home to Laban's home, and he fell in love with the youngest daughter named Rachel. And Jacob served for 7 years to marry Rachel. That was his agreement with Laban. He served 7 years with the flocks to be able to marry Rachel, but was tricked to marry Leah, the older daughter, by their father Laban. So on the day of the wedding, they actually put like a burqa on her so he couldn't see her, and he thought he was getting Rachel, but when he woke up in the morning, he had Leah. And he was really distraught. So he went back to Laban, and he said, "Why have you done this to me?" And so he had to agree to actually work 7 more years for Laban in order to get Rachel. And so, but when he did actually was able to get Rachel and marry Rachel, Rachel was barren. She couldn't have children. But Leah was having a multitude of children. And so it really created a lot of jealousy even between the sisters. And of course, being barren in biblical times like that was one of the worst possible things that could happen to a woman who married and wanted to have children. And so God eventually blessed Rachel with her first son. His name was Joseph. But later, some years later, Rachel died giving birth to their second son, Benjamin. And Jacob loved Joseph and favored him above all the other sons he had, because he loved Rachel so much, and Joseph was the firstborn of Rachel. And so he made him a coat of many colors. It kind of set him apart, you know, with the other guys. And so the brothers really got to envying, and they just hated Joseph because of this special treatment that he was getting from his father. But eventually, after sharing these dreams with his brothers, they hatched up a plan to kill him. And when his father sent him out to the area where they were tending the flocks, and they saw him coming with that coat of many colors, they said, "Let's just get rid of this guy." So Judah wanted to kill him, but Reuben ended up saying, "No, let's don't let blood be on our hands." So what they ended up doing was they stripped him of his clothes, they roughed him up, and as an Old Testament professor said, I had said, they kind of picked him up by the nape of the neck and the seat of the breeches and give him a long throw, and he kind of bounced 2 or 3 times on the ground before he went into the pit, which is a well. Now, you got to understand, in biblical times, a well wasn't like a hand-dug well that we have, which is a hole about 3 feet wide or 4 and straight down. In soapstone there, they would dig down so far, and then they would actually hollow it out underneath that in soapstone. So it kind of almost went down like this in there. And it was a long way to the bottom. And the reason the wells were dug that way was so that water would not evaporate back out the entrance or the hole. And it makes it specifically clear that that well was dry, otherwise Joseph would have drowned, because there was no way he could reach anything to begin to climb back out. And so Reuben went back to check on him. This group of Midianite traders came through on their way to Egypt. And Reuben went back to check on him, and Joseph was not in the pit anymore. So they'd gotten him out of the pit and sold him into slavery to these Midianite traders. And they took him to Egypt, and Potiphar, who was one of Pharaoh's people, upper echelon folks, bought him as a slave and put him in his house. And God just blessed Joseph in everything he did, so that whatever he did, it prospered. Until Potiphar's wife got her eye on him and tried to seduce him. And when he ran, she grabbed his cloak, and he had to actually flee nude out of there. And then she told Potiphar that Joseph had made attempts to seduce her. And, of course, he was put in prison. After he stayed in prison a while, Pharaoh had some dreams, and no one could interpret those dreams. So they went and got Joseph out of prison, and Joseph came and interpreted those dreams, which talked about the 7 years of crops and the 7 years of famine that was going to be coming. And God began to really use and bless Joseph's life, because after interpreting those dreams, he was placed in a royal position, second only to Pharaoh, and given control over the rationing of food over all of Egypt and the surrounding areas. And this is kind of where the story picks up with his brothers again. Because in this, what God is, I think, teaching us is we too must envision and acknowledge God's dream leadership in our lives. He has a purpose, a vision, a dream for each of us to accomplish in our own lives. And this helps us to discover that dream for our lives. And the first step in living the dream is to really listen to God, because he calls us to surrender our will to his purpose in our lives so that we can live that dream. We don't always see that as a dream at first. It's like the guy on the video, I'm never getting married. And everything happens until the very end, and he finally sees the dream. So we commit to Christ completely. Then we dare to live God's dream for our lives, even when it seems impossible. I want you to think about that. Joseph dreamed this dream. He shared that dream. His family ridiculed him. They rebuked him. But he dreamed even more and shared the dreams. His dreams were stifled by fear and lack of acceptance, but his dreams had deep root. What's your dreams like? What's your expectations like? Like the two Eskimos that went out to ice fish, and one cut a hole in ice about this big, and the other cut a hole the size of a whale in the shape of a whale. Expectations. What do we really expect God to do? You may not have dared to live your dreams for reasons, the same type of reasons of fear and feelings of inadequacy or risk. Some years ago when we were out west, you can still see this in Missouri. Out across the prairie, you can see wagon tracks that are still embedded in the prairie where the early settlers moved in the gold rush to California. And so in 1849, wagons leaving St. Joseph, Missouri to cross the prairie, already rutted out by earlier wagons, saw a banner on the west end of Main Street. And this is what it said: choose your rut carefully. You may be in it all the way to California. And so my thinking there, my point is, that to dare to live the dream, choose the rut, choose God's dream for your life. Because all we do is, when we choose our own source, our own path, we choose a rut that sometimes we can't get out of. And you know what the definition of a rut is? It's a grave with both ends open. And we get embedded in that. So we discover God's dream and purpose for your life and launch out. And then risk living God's dream for your life, regardless of the hardships that it may bring. Because Joseph was thrown into the pit, he was sold into slavery, he was cast into prison. But his dreams must first be put into action before they can be reality. They have to be lived out. There are risks to that. Commitment to Christ helps us meet that challenge. And through it all, God protected Joseph and gave him joy. Edward Lindemann said, it helps to realize that everything that is now possible was at one time impossible. Think about that. Think about the things you've seen happen, even technologically, in your own lifetime. Risk reaching, believe, and have faith. One powerful story, and this is a true story, in the 19th century, the greatest tightrope walker in the world was a man named Charles Blunden. He is a Frenchman. And on June the 30th, 1859, he became the first man in history to walk a tightrope across Niagara Falls. Over 25,000 people gathered to watch him walk 1,100 feet, suspended on a tiny rope 160 feet above the raging waters, and he worked without a net or any safety harness of any kind. The slightest slip would have proved fatal for him. And when he safely reached the Canadian side, the crowd just burst into a mighty roar. And in the days following, he walked across the falls many times on that tightrope. One time he did it on stilts. Another time he took a chair and a stove with him and sat down midway across and cooked an omelet and ate it. And once he pushed a wheelbarrow across loaded with 350 pounds of cement. But then he turned to the spectators and he asked this question because they were cheering him on. Do you believe I can carry a man across on my back? And all of them were saying, yes, yes, yes. No question. Look at all the things you've done already. No question you can carry a man across. And he said, who's willing to get on? And the crowd kind of backpedaled. But in the museum at Niagara Falls on the Canadian side, you will see a picture of this where he carried his manager across on his back to the Canadian side, or from New York to the Canadian side and back, because his manager was the only one who believed in him strong enough to say, you can do it. We sometimes are that way with God's dream in our life. We see it. We know it's there. We know he can get us across. But taking that step of faith and making that risk, sometimes we withdraw and hold back. Living the dream may not always be convenient or comfortable, because what happened to Joseph wasn't convenient or comfortable, but sacrificial. And what happened to Jesus wasn't convenient or comfortable, but sacrificial. And we too have to dare to dream, live the dream, and take the risk of living the dream. Then, thirdly, live God's dream for your life until there is a harvest of transformed lives. In the end, following Joseph's revelation to his brothers, they were scared because they thought, here's the guy who is second in command to Pharaoh in all of Egypt, and we've come down to get food. And they came several times. And on the last time, Joseph decided he couldn't contain himself anymore, and he decided to reveal who he was in relationship to them. And when he told them, they were very fearful, because in his position, he could take their life very easily. But in the end, his revelation to his brothers, his whole family experienced reconciliation because he lived God's dream for his life. His whole family. And there's been many in history that have done this, like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Jesus and Paul and Peter and Annie Armstrong and Lottie Moon and Billy Graham, and some of you who are present today have done that. But some of you haven't. You haven't lived that dream. Living the dream will stretch us like a small child attempting to walk in its parents' footsteps in the snow. You won't be able to do it at first, but the attempt will change your life and the lives of others, and eventually you'll grow into those footprints. God's dream shaped Joseph's life for service and reward, and it'll do the same for you and I. Dare and risk living God's dream until it's fulfilled in the harvest of transformed lives. Because we have to envision and acknowledge God's dream and leadership in our lives and yield it to him. I'm a cartoon fan, so not only do I like Winnie the Pooh, but some of the Land Before Time videos I like too. There's some good stories in those, by the way, if you haven't watched them. But in the first one, first series called A Land Before Time, the characters, many were very young, are on a journey of life. That's what it's called, the journey of life, in search of the Great Valley. And the Great Valley is known as a place of security and eternal safety. If they can just get there, they won't have to worry about anything anymore. And although having never been there, they see it in their hearts. Sharptooth, who is the T-Rex in the movie, rains terror on them all the way through the journey. And Littlefoot, who's one of the small dinosaurs, his mother is actually fatally wounded by Sharptooth and dies. But her spirit reassures Littlefoot, "I'll be in your heart. Let your heart guide you." But he felt so alone at times. The valley was a long way off. The journey was perilous. He would have to make it, or the circle of life would be broken. He followed the bright circle, which is the sun. And he was almost ready to give up, but again his mother's spirit reassured him. And they traveled through one cave, and there it was. All they had dreamed it would be. And there they grew together and passed on the dream. That's the way God has given us a dream. If we'll follow the sun, he'll get us to the great valley. That's where he wants to lead us. A place of security and eternal safety. A place where we are all together and reassured, and it will be more than we have ever dreamed it will be. There's twists and turns sometimes to our dreams. Feelings of fear, aloneness, discouragement, the relentlessness of life. But in this story, look what happened in the end. And you too can live God's dream for your life, because God calls each of us to surrender our will to his purpose in our lives so we can live that dream. So we can live that dream. Do you sense his spirit reassuring you? Do you sense his spirit calling you? Is he revealing to you what he wants you to do, what he wants you to be? Maybe he's calling you into a personal relationship with him today. Maybe he's calling you to a renewed fellowship with him today. Maybe he is calling you to a ministry or service. Maybe he's calling you to join the fellowship of dreamers that belong here. What will be your choice? Come, let's experience what it's like to live the dream.